Overdrive, off and running here on TSN 4, TSN 1050, and the iHeartRadio Canada app. And no, you don't adjust your televisions or your radios. You're not hallucinating. What you're seeing is indeed reality. And there are people around TSN rolling their eyes, including our technical producer, JP. This could be an interesting show, that's for sure. I can guarantee it will be interesting. Yeah. I am Aaron Karolnik, usually from First Up on TSN 1050, Frankie Carrado, and a man who needs no introduction on this program, Al's brother, your co-hosting debut on the show,
Al's brother. Yes, excited. Excited to be with the boys. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly whose idea it was to put the three of us on here, but man, do we have a show in store.
It's crazy today that they allowed us to do this, really. Like they should have made us sign some kind of waiver saying that if we say something stupid, like it's not their fault if they fire us or something like that.
So I was the only one who signed that waiver.
Oh, okay.
I guess you guys didn't even ask you to sign the waiver, is an exciting show. A big night in Toronto, huge game for the Toronto Blue Jays down to the Dome with Alek Manoah on the hill. And if you were to ever need a stopper on the hill, it's Manoah tonight following what we saw last night from Yusei Kikuchi, another brutal performance. A lot of people, including myself, believe that's the last we're going to see from Yusei Kikuchi. And if you're down there, this year, how could you possibly throw him back out there considering everything we've seen from him this year? And now the Jays boys, they're in a battle for a playoff spot. They are just a game and a half up on Baltimore, their opponent tonight. And they play Baltimore, I believe, 9 more times down the stretch here. No game is insignificant going forward. And throwing Yusei Kikuchi on the hill, a significantly terrible decision night after night. And it was on full display again last night, Frank.
Yeah, I'm wondering, too, like, you say it might be Yusei Kikuchi. No, but you say it might be the last time we see him. I wonder if the move is to the bullpen for him, because maybe he's a guy who can just give you an inning or two innings as a lefty, maybe addresses that with Mazo now. But I have a hard time seeing him start games.
Well, he's got to find the strike zone. Like, can you really put him out there even in the bullpen? I know he's got a decent fastball out there, but I'm with you. When it comes to Kikuchi, this guy honestly is giving me. Remember Edwin Jackson two, 3 years ago, where he had four straight starts, was a battering ram, and they're like DFA'd. The problem with Kikuchi is this guy's under contract long term. He signed a $36 million 3-year deal this offseason. That's not easy to bear. That's not easy to bite the bullet if you're the Blue Jays on that one. But at the same time, you're in a playoff race. And if this guy's going out there and he's just getting hammered each and every time he's out there, you really have to think. And we heard John Schneider, he was talking about options. There's not many options in my book.
So, yeah, to be honest. You say the idea of moving him to the bullpen. The thing about Kikuchi is, and we saw it again last night, he gets battered in the first inning. So,
I know.
Are we really going to expect something different? I understand he's a lefty. Maybe in a certain situation, it could call for Kikuchi to be inserted there.
But his approach. It's just a different approach.
But he has. That's the thing. They've gone out. They've changed his grips. They've gone out and they changed his arm slots.
No, I think it's a mental thing at this point for him. If he starts a game, he's probably thinking, okay, I have all this game in front of me, right? I want to make it to 5 innings. What if the key for him is just worry about 1 inning? You're going to get 1 inning of work, and then from there we can kind of dose you up a little more. I actually think the solution for him is, if someone in the Blue Jays front office can get in touch with Aaron Rodgers and his girlfriend Blue of Earth,
okay,
Kikuchi, okay, then they're going to go out to Joshua Tree, and they're going to fire up the ayahuasca, and I think that's the solution for Kikuchi.
So you want the Johnny Drama, Chase entourage?
I think Listen, you're invested $36 million in this guy. What's a little ayahuasca out in the desert? Just find yourself, man. Because whatever you're doing, it's not working.
It ain't working.
Well, it's a disaster. It's a disaster because you talk about the damage he has already inflicted on the Toronto Blue Jays. In Kikuchi starts this season, they are 6-14. 6-14. That is crazy, crazy bad for a guy making $12 million a year.
They're not. And the bats haven't really been much help either, right? But when you look at his stats, specifically, he had that decent stretch in May. But you look at his stats, his last 11 starts since June 3rd. Only 41 innings he's gotten through in 11 starts, first of all. That's concerning. Giving up 15 bombs, 15 home runs. in like those practice. 41 innings, a 7.02 ERA, a 7.85 FIP, and his opponents are hitting a 1,007 OPS on him. People are hitting at an all-star
Barry Bonds. MVP, they're Barry Bonds against him.
MVP pace on
everyone's,
this guy.
Everyone's the greatest hitter Jonas has ever seen in Juan Soto. Well,
that's exactly
it.
That's it. Well, I mean, I guess it's if you look on the positive side for the Toronto Blue Jays, Ross Stripling nearing a return, I could just take Yusei out of the mix. I can see another, that neck. Little kink in the neck. I think it might call for another Eielstyn. You just slide Mitch White in there and see you later, Yusei. We'll see you next year.
You and I talked about this, I think, on the morning show last week. Why didn't they skip his start yesterday? Right?
It
they
was had something the rain to delay. Do with the days off. Right?
I think in part, Os Brother had to do with giving Alek Manoah a little bit of a break because he's approaching an innings limit that he's never encountered.
But there was an extra day because of the rain delay, though. So that's already, because of the off day, everyone's. Was already pushed back to 6 days, and then they got that 7th day because of the rain delay.
Yeah.
If he was still, I think one extra day could have been all right. I mean, I guess they wanted to make sure, maybe Kikuchi against Baltimore, maybe he can right his wrongs, but it's now 2 starts against Baltimore. He's gotten blown up.
I also think, too, you have to be careful with Manoah, because Manoah and Gausman have been carrying the load for this team for so long, and their margin for error now is so slim. Like, Manoah's on the mound tonight, and we're sitting here, anyone who's going to watch the game is fully expecting, very good baseball from him, a win, keeping the runs low, a couple hits. But, he needs to have, as a young pitcher, he needs to have a little bit of room for error because he's not Roger Clemens yet. He's on that track, but to expect him to be that now.
The grappler over here, Roger Clemens. And
I asked Steve Phillips one day, I said, who does he remind you of? He says Roger Clemens. So...
He's got the fire out there. But the problem, even with Manoah, though, and to your point, the guy has pitched, I think he's top 5 right now in innings pitched in the American League. He's never pitched so much before, right? And it's starting, his numbers are starting to tail off a little bit.
That's
my point. He's starting
to
see that fatigue.
That's my point.
His last 3 starts haven't been Manoah-esque. He's got, 4.96 ERA in his last 3 starts combined. It's not quite what he was dealing early on this season when he was, in the Cy Young race. So is it fatigue that's getting to this guy?
Well, you might be onto something, and that could be a reason why they kind of pushed him a little bit back as far as his starts go. I think giving him rest down the stretch is crucial because, as you mentioned, Frank, beyond Manoah, beyond Gausman, Barrios, you never really know what you're going to get.
No,
and if we work under the assumption that Kikuchi's out of the mix.
That's the thing. Kikuchi's going to be out of the mix. Let's say he's not a long-term solution here, right? He's obviously not because he can't pitch. So why are you gonna tax Manoah and Gausman way more just to keep getting Kikuchi?
I can tell you the answer. Well, I think Kikuchi's done because Stripling's back. Mitch White will take his spot. Mitch White can really go 75 pitches, and that's basically all you're going to get. So that's going to tax the bullpen.
Yeah.
So it's not ideal, but nor is being a game and a half up on Baltimore, 2 games up on Minnesota and Chicago. You got teams biting on those heels right now. You can't be pissing away games with Yusei Kikuchi because every time he takes the mound, and I'm sure you could speak to this as a former professional athlete, or current, depending on where things stand.
Yeah.
You're a little in the mix.
We're in a transition.
We're in
transition
phase. Former, a little, I'm sure, painful for you to say because that's not the case. But, and I'm sorry, Frank. But you think about if you have a goaltender who just allows these terrible goals night after night for you, and you're as a defenseman's tearing back, they're like, dude, make a save.
Something.
I'm sure for the defense and the offense behind Kikuchi night after night, it's like, geez, man.
Well, and then you see the errors that happen, right? You see the errors that happen, and is that bad luck, or is that because guys are getting frustrated because they're not getting the pitching and it's throwing them off their game? Listen, at the end of the day, you're a professional and you need to do your job. That's all you should worry about. But we're athletes are human, right? So you're going to see things, you're going to get frustrated about it, and it's going to creep in your game. You have to do as good of a job as you can to just focus on doing your job. The old New England Patriots, just do your job, focus on your job, and everything else can kind of take care of itself that way.
We've got Keegan Mathison from MLB.com. He's going to join us in about 20 minutes' time. Looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to Al's brother sharing the revelation he gave to me prior to the show, Frank.
Really?
And Al's brother's a man currently living in Niagara Falls, and you're probably rolling your eyes right now, AB, because you're a little bit nervous about the way I'm going to present this. But He has an appointment following the show to look at a condo.
Nice.
Downtown Toronto. A little bit pricey, I think you'd agree.
Yep.
But his idea, Frank, is...
Well, so it's a 1+1. And if the plus one is good enough to, like, rent it out, I guess, kind of sublet it as a room,
yeah,
I might be looking for a roommate. And apparently AK has maybe a solution for
it. Well, I mean, I could see a contest here at TSN 1050, the Al's brother roommate hunt.
How is that going
to
go?
Who wants to be Al's brother's roommate? And, I mean, I'm sure there's
a long list
of applicants. And if you're interested of sharing a condo in downtown Toronto with Al's brother, text us 105050 and you might be indeed
Al's brother Airbnb. Here's the way it works. So you do a trivia question or a trivia something on every Friday. Okay, the winner moves in on Monday, spends the whole week with Al's brother. Then you do another one. Al's brother, he makes the bed, he puts the chocolate on the floor, gives you fresh towels, right? You get to your slippers right by the bed, and you just, that's it. Like that, and we'll find a way to monetize it for the station, of course. Yeah.
Oh, of course. Maybe you and I could take a cut off the top, Frank.
Well, listen, we would take a cut.
I don't know about that, fellas. That's on me if I got to do all the work on that one. But, yeah, that'd be interesting if we could try and figure something out there, because I am looking to get back into the city as this commute is starting to
take its toll on you.
From Niagara Falls to Scarborough, it's starting to take its toll on you.
Let me ask you this though: like, so does your apartment or condo search does it need to have a hot tub in the
100%
building? What a great
100%. This any building I look at, if it doesn't have a hot tub, I'm not interested.
How could
I'm just not interested.
Spoiled. Yeah, exactly. It's part of your daily routine. How can you go from hot tub to no hot tub now?
This has been part of my routine. AK and I lived not with each other, but lived in this building. When I was in Toronto before, there was a hot tub in that building I frequented on a nightly basis. It was part of my nightly staple before bed. Quick little hour in the tub, upstairs, take a shower.
It wasn't busy.
Absolutely.
Let's just say there were a lot of hair in that tub at the end of that hour, because that is one hairy individual.
If you were coming in from dinner or something, you take a little cruise just to see if Al's brother's in there?
No, but in retrospect, I should have.
Yeah.
I wasn't a big hot tub guy back in those days, but I could be converted, no doubt. Yeah. And
there's a hot tub crew
I'm looking on the TSN4. Al's brother could be looking for a roommate. Share your take at Overdrive 1050. What is your take? And I don't know. I think it's something that would be very alluring for one lucky individual. So imagine you responding to a Kijiji ad, looking for a roommate downtown Toronto. Yeah. Walk in, little meet and greet. Al's brother's there?
Oh, yeah.
What could be better than that?
It could happen. It could happen, right? Like, at some point, unless I end up getting a place by myself, could be looking for a roommate. So this is something that we can maybe think about and try and do something
here. Well, I have an idea for you, and I don't know if he'll go for it, but Jeff O'Neill, the O-Dog, your partner, Team Al-Dog, I mean, would he consider perhaps sliding into that den? Maybe you take the den.
Not a chance.
That is a sitcom waiting to happen. Oh. And the O-Dog's in Edmonton, of course, covering the World Juniors.
So maybe we'll ask him. He'll be with us at 5 o'clock, 5:05. Might be a question. Would you be Al's brother's roommate if he took... you have to take the den, though. Got to take the den.
Yeah, I think
I wonder if he would even spend a night.
No, he wouldn't.
Just spend the night watching some games.
No, he would walk in and he would see the whole situation. No, pal.
Yes, the grappler pointing out the cats could also be a problem, so it needs to be pet-friendly in that condo. Well, the O-Dog has spent many nights in Edmonton covering the World Juniors for us here on TSN. Day off for the crew today, and it looks like they're playing some golf in honor of Bobby Margarita's birthday. Happy birthday to Bob McKenzie. And we'll ask the O-Dog what they have planned and, of course, what it was like to see Connor Bedard go full Ovechkin last night.
Man.
Is that a fair assessment of that goal he scored to make it 3-0 for Canada, a 6-3 win for the Canadians over Finland? But, man, this guy, 5'9", 175, but just rockets
Bullets.
It. Yeah. Rockets
so
it.
So unassuming, man. Like, it's crazy because when you think about McDavid, you think about the blistering speed. When you think about Crosby, you think about that lower body strength and, you know, the size of his legs and how he protects the puck. You think about Matthews, you think about just a complete player with the shot, but, you know, a bigger guy too. Like, I remember seeing Matthews for the first time thinking, this is not an 18-year-old. Yeah. Like, this is a man-child. Like, I think a lot of the guys at that first training camp that year were like, this kid is a child, and you see Connor Bedard, and he's just a kid. Like, he looks like he's just a kid, but he is just, it's like he's thinking the game a step ahead of you. He knows what he wants to do with it, and his shot is so lethal, so like such a good release. He's got that
too.
Yeah, he's got that 70 flex stick that he's just leaning on. They showed a close up of him shooting that puck, and you could see like he's like clenching his jaw, his eyes are closed. I'm like, this guy is just ripping the puck as hard as he can. I love it. I think he's such a good player. I think he has what it takes to be in that conversation as far as a player who can turn your franchise around when you draft him.
Well, statistically speaking, I mean, you compare Bedard's stats in junior to that of some of the greats in the last 25 years, he is right there. And I think it might be a little bit unfair to place those expectations on him right now. But I mean, considering everything we've seen from him, not only in this tournament so far, and of course, riding shotgun with Mason McTavish doesn't hurt. I mean, going back to December before the tournament was postponed, dude was dominating there too.
And
7 months later,
he was the 13th forward back then. He was not supposed to be, you know, in a prominent role, and he played his way on second line at that point, and now he's the dog.
Well, that's what I find like awesome about Connor Bedard, because he started out as a 13th guy and worked his way up, but this, you could tell, right, in this tournament, like, plays driving through Connor Bedard. They're looking to get that guy the puck out there. Him and Mason McTavish have formed a tremendous duo. Like, their chemistry out there is unbelievable. That goal that they scored, I think it was against Slovakia, that give and go between McTavish. Like, that was unbelievable. Like, jaw-dropping. And he's only 17, freshly turned 17, and he is just murdering a 19-20-year-old's tournament.
It's true, and that's so exciting. I'm sure if you're a member of the Chicago Blackhawks brass or the Arizona Coyotes, you're watching this, be like, yeah, all right, hold on, Patrick Kane, can we get you out of town so we can lose more games and improve our draft?
We're going to play Mrazek 76 games
that's
this
right.
year.
So poor Mrazek. Well, I mean, Mrazek, the hockey equivalent of Yusei Kikuchi for the Leafs last year. So.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know who that it would be more insulting to. Is it Yusei Kikuchi or Peter Mrazek? But I think it's an apt comparison, and you know, I think that speaks a lot to the state of the Toronto Blue Jays pitching staff as well. We'll get into that with Keegan Madison in about 15 minutes. But you mentioned the O-Dog will join us at 5:05. Bob Weeks will join us at 6:30. Big meeting today with the PGA Tour. Apparently, they called it Big Cat Tiger Woods. Talking to the top 20 players regarding LIV and everything that's transpired and will transpire, Frank.
Can you break this down for me? So, they're having a meeting, and it's the top 20 players in the world that are on the PGA Tour, and Tiger is flying in. Is he leading the meeting?
Well,
like, what?
We don't know exactly the details as to what's going on, but sure Tiger has a significant
his voice holds weight.
As it
of
should.
Of course it does, but it seems strange to me because, A, I don't know how much these players, these young guys who haven't earned as much as Tiger, I don't know how much they can relate to him, right, when it comes to finances and stuff like that. I do think that Tiger's voice is probably going to carry a lot of weight in that meeting. And then the other thing, too, it almost seems like it's an old fraternity, and this guy who graduated in 1999 is coming back to talk to them about, you know, like that. It's just weird. Like, it seems like it's informal. It seems like it's an odd situation.
I just don't know what are they looking to accomplish with this meeting?
Well, I mean, Alan Shipnuck, who's a very reputable golf reporter, tweeted yesterday that he's hearing that this meeting regarding LIV is going to be, quote, a banger.
Yeah.
Supposedly everything on the table, from major championship boycotts to Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour commissioner, his future, to a larger compromise with LIV. So it sounds like...
That's literally everything.
Well, that is
everything you can imagine.
But, I mean, threatening to boycott major championships...
I don't see that...
Well,
I don't see that happening. Well, also, like, think back to when Tiger was first asked about this a couple of months ago. One of the big things about why he said he didn't go to LIV, he was offered, what, like $800 million
something like that,
something stupid. And he's like, I just couldn't fathom not being able to play at Augusta. So you're going to tell me that now you're going to go and you're going to boycott it?
Well,
you're not going to play it anyway?
Here's the thing. Golf is slowly becoming, assuming things go the way I think it's going to go, golf is becoming tennis, where the best players in the world congregate four times a year. And that's just it. You see it in tennis, the four Grand Slams.
Yep.
You're going to see it in the golf world. And it sounds like more PGA Tour stars are on the verge of departing following the FedEx Cup playoffs. We know Cam Smith, he's on, basically.
Well,
done deal.
He pulled shoot, right?
He didn't want to be any part of it. Why would he?
Some lingering hip issues, and like I that sounds pretty convenient considering that you got a unfavorable two-stroke penalty call the day after it happened at the St. Jude.
He probably had no interest in sitting in that meeting and just having this scorn of Scottie Scheffler, like when he stepped over him on the practice
green.
I don't know
how Cameron Smith could even look at Tiger right now. Like with what Tiger has said and his stance on it, how could a guy like Cam Smith, who is a great young golfer, but he hasn't accomplished nearly what Tiger has, how are you going to look him in the eye and be like, hi, Tiger, hi, Mr. Like, it's not going to happen.
It's a tough situation. Yeah. Tough situation for everybody involved.
Well, it is, but like also, what does he got to say to Tiger? Everybody knows why these guys are jumping ship and going to live. It's like, Tiger, you've made $1 billion in your lifetime. You've made hundreds of millions of dollars in your lifetime. Like, I'm not there.
Yep.
Like, I need this money for my family. Like, this is how we make generational. Yeah. So well, it's not difficult.
I mean, Cameron Smith's not poor. Like, he's doing just fine for himself. Okay,
but all of these guys, though, who are going over there, and none of these guys are poor. These guys are winning championships and are top 20. The guys that are winning are not poor.
The only thing that I have a hard time watching when it comes to the PGA Tour is a guy who's grinded on these mini tours and these lesser tours and finally makes his way to the PGA, gets into one event on a Monday qualifier, and he misses the cut by a shot. And he goes home empty-handed. I don't understand that one. That's the only thing that drives me nuts. But with the LIV Tour isn't even catering to that because it's 48 handpicked players who are already rich, already going to make a lot of money as it is, and they're getting handed buckets, Brinks trucks of money. So the LIV Tour is not helping that guy who made it on the Monday qualifier who now is going home empty-handed because he missed a cut by one shot.
More spots on the tour, though, Frank. If they're going to LIV, that opens up a spot for somebody else. I do agree with you, and we'll talk to Bob Weeks about it at 6:30. He's probably dialed in. He's got a voice at that meeting.
Yeah.
My guess is
that's Bob Weeks.
That's right.
On the wall, at least
he represents our interests north of the border. And we'll welcome Keegan Mathison to the show on the other side from MLB.com, and it's a big one down at the Dome. Alek Manoah on the hill, the stopper. Can the Jays pick up a much needed win? We'll get into that with Mathison next. The Replacements edition of Overdrive continues here on TSN4, TSN 1050, and the iHeartRadio Canada app. Karolnik Corrado DiStefano with you, and we revealed earlier in the show that Al's brother potentially looking for a roommate and a new condo. Who are you getting DMs from right now, Al's brother?
I got a DM pretty quickly from a real estate agent saying, I have a list of condos with hot tubs ready for you when you need it.
Oh, that is magnificent.
I will get back to you at some point.
You get a little leverage here. You might be able to work in a deal, buddy.
Maybe. I mean, I could see a free condo. You know, when you're an NHL player, when you're an NHL player, you need to join the Leafs. Were they picking up the tab on your hotel, your condo?
No.
Oh, I had to pay. I thought maybe they did.
I was the last person that would have got that deal. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah.
Well, that might be a bad example.
Here's the way it works for a guy like me when I was playing, okay? The guys with a lot of money, you know, there's some nicer buildings in town. We're talking about the Ritz, the Shangri-La, the Four Seasons, all these like very nice, expensive buildings. Your friend over here was not living in those buildings. I was finding a deal in, nothing against City Place, but that's where I was living. Okay, right by the Dome, Navy Wharf, great little pocket.
Navy Wharf.
Got the tennis court in the back. That's where I was living. Great view of the Gardner. I had a great view. Remember when they had that big duck? For the they spent a crazy amount of money on that buck. I was looking at that thing for a couple weeks.
Well, text us 1050-50 if you have any leads for Al's brother, or if you want to be potentially his roommate. I know the Grappler has compiled some texts. Graps, what do we got on the text line?
Honestly, it's all over the place. For starters, there is a crazy amount of love for charcuterie boards. Crazy amount of love for charcuterie boards. And even those saying that I wouldn't be able to live with Al's brother because my entire life would just be based around charcuterie boards. So lot of charcuterie board mentions. A couple in particular that stood out. Here's number one. It's Dan from G-Town. I'm 53, bald, and good looking. He could be my wingman. I'm smoldering hot.
What a response.
I am very curious to see what Dan could bring to the table as a roommate. Another one. Does Al's brother smoke a lot of weed?
Al's brother?
Question.
A lot? No.
Would you care to address that, Al's brother?
Yeah, no would be the answer to that question.
And then one another one, Kikuchi may be looking for a friend. So
I think that's true.
You'd have to talk through the interpreter, but he probably... Probably a little lonely right now.
I don't know if there'd be room for the interpreter and a 1+1.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Ryan McLeod tweeting in, level of concern, another game we play here on Overdrive. Al's Brothers Filter, by the way, coming up later, and confirm or deny. You are Al's Brothers' roommate, and he walks in on you devouring a charcuterie he spent all morning making for a hot date.
Get out of here.
Yeah, that's an eviction waiting to happen.
That's right. That's exactly what that
Al's brother would attack you ferociously at that point.
Yeah, it would be a tough one.
Yeah, don't touch my cured meats.
Well, you say Kikuchi, and there is a poll question. If you had to choose one, who would you pick as your roommate? And it's not our finest idea. I think that might have been me, Grappler. I apologize. You say Kikuchi, Peter Mrazek, or Al's brother. Love character in the city. Kikuchi, Mrazek, not so much. So I don't know why you're associated with those two guys.
I mean, Kikuchi, though, like that guy, at least he's got rich. Some money. Right?
That's true.
He's rich. You know, he could pull his weight.
He'll buy some nice dinners. Yeah,
he wouldn't mind buying charcuterie for two. I don't know if I could afford that on
that's
my salary.
Right. You could be dining at Harbor 60 Jacobs each and every night.
Yeah.
With you,
Timmy's Chili might have to be your spot to go.
Yeah. Well, let's bring in Keegan Matheson from MLB.com, who I'm sure is keenly interested in a conversation like this. So, Keegan, we'll bring you in. I'll kind of loop into the conversation. Al's brother looking potentially for a roommate downtown Toronto. Would you have any interest?
That's a tough one for you.
I thought we were boys.
They hung up.
They heard that. The Jays have been struggling. So I can't deal with this today. I cannot do this today. That's it.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, we might have some phone issues behind the glass, but we're going to rectify those and welcome Keegan in a little bit later. But or maybe there's no issues at all. And he's just like, no, I want no part of this conversation.
I don't want to answer that question.
I want no part of the conversation. Well, maybe Keegan's busy interpreting the lineup that was released by the Toronto Blue Jays earlier, where there's been a significant shift in some of the guys and where they slot in. Bo Bichette, seventh in the order, and that should really come as no surprise based on his performance. Dude has a 300 on base this year, and yes, there were some home runs last week, and maybe we thought he was getting out of his tailspin just a little bit, but I mean, based on the entirety of the season and what we've seen from him, it makes sense to move him down, considering some of the guys they've moved up, including Matt Chapman.
It does, and it's a complete 180 to where we were at the beginning of John Schneider's tenure as the manager of the ball club, because first thing he did was make him the cleanup hitter, put him fourth. He's a guy who we think you get guys on base, he'll be able to bring him in to score. That has not been the case. Him hitting with runners in scoring position, .226 average.
Oof.
Not great at all. So pushing him down to seventh, it's tough, and it's a little bit of a, hey, kid, pick it up, let's go. It's a bit of accountability thing, I think, when it comes to the Bo here.
The other thing, too, like, Gurriel's been hitting great. Like, and you know, he doesn't hit for power, but he's singles. He's, you know, he's someone who can put the ball in play, and if you have a guy like Springer who's already on base and Vladdy's getting on base, like, maybe that's a guy you play a little more small ball because his average is the best on the team.
Well, Jays don't have an issue getting guys on second and third. It's getting them across the plate.
Man, they have such a hard time cashing in.
Yes.
It is remarkable.
I don't understand that.
With the way that Vlad has performed relative to expectations. A lot of people were like, all right, he's going to hit 45, 50 jacks.
He almost had a triple crown winner last year.
Well, that's it. And Bichette, I mean, we just mentioned, and George Springer's been hurt. The Jays are still second in the American League in runs scored.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that, it doesn't add up. And I wanted to bring that up. I scored 40 runs in three games. Maybe if you remove that, it's maybe like fourth, fifth, sixth in the AL, probably more where they slot in. But this is not a bad offensive team. But I think when you, what is the old saying? A duck, it's probably a duck. I mean, the Jays are what they are. And is it possible they catch lightning in the bottle like they did last year? Remember, I think they had 20 or 21 wins in the month of September last year.
You also had guys, though, that were, I guess, hitting more than they usually did, like having up years.
Yeah.
And this year we're seeing a little bit of a down year for Bichette. Vladdy, I don't think you can call it a down year for Vladdy anymore. Like, I think the only player who has more home runs than Vladdy is Aaron Judge. I think it's a calendar year, like going back to 2021. But the thing that concerns me with Vladdy is there's been a few times now. There's two on, two out, and it's a ground out, right? And they see that strike on the first pitch, and they want to hit it. Like, maybe we can work the count a little bit there. Like, I don't know. I'm not a hitter, but I just feel like that's something that I've seen when it comes to runners in scoring position. It's like they're a little too horned up for it.
Yeah, and we will see George Springer back at the top of the lineup like we saw him yesterday. He is DHing, not in center field. Who knows if and when we'll see him in center field again, because he did come out last night after the game and say he's managing the pain. And
he's still got that sleeve on, too. I wouldn't be having him in center field anytime soon.
Well, and yeah, I think that would be unrealistic. I'm not sure that serves any purpose for the
Toronto
Blue
Jays. Asking for another IL stint,
well,
really.
There's that, and is he really capable physically at this point to play center field in the major leagues? And he did mention we'll address whatever's ailing him in the offseason last night. I don't know if he's going to have some kind of surgery or some arthroscopic whatever on that elbow, but clearly it's not going away. So it's something he's going to have to deal with. And if you look at George Springer as your DH, that means you're going to see a lot of Whit Merrifield in center, maybe some Tapia, and that's what you're dealing with going forward.
What that also means, and I mean, Kirk has kind of slowed down a little bit, but now instead of having Danny Jansen behind the plate, and you know you want to get Alejandro Kirk's bat in the game, so you're going to start him a little bit more. Is that going to affect the pitching also? Because you're not going to have him as your DH for as many games you originally thought you would, like you did early on the season. Yeah. And then you have Danny Jansen, a really good defensive pitcher for you. Now you got to kind of play them both as a 50-50 platoon type of thing, as opposed to, all right, Danny, you're going out there, and you're going to start probably four games, and then you'll have Kirky come in, use him as a bat in the DH. Now all of a sudden you're looking and it's like, no, you need to use, you got to use that spot for George Springer.
I look back at the moves they made at the deadline, and the two guys that have come in the bullpen, I think they've done, a pretty good job. They are what they are.
Pop, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And Mitch White has been fine. Like, he gets you, 70 pitches. He'll get you to the fifth inning. Like,
give you four innings of good baseball.
There you go. Okay, so they weren't in the market for Montas or Castillo. So they got what they got. I wonder now if there's a little bit of
a regret
because you didn't try and bring in anyone who, I guess, anyone more substantial, because Kikuchi has not worked out. Stripling's been on the IL. I think the Merrifield was really smart because, you could put Springer on the IL. But I feel like there might still be a little more to be desired there. If you want to talk about them being contenders.
Well, and I think there is an element of this that is prisoner of the moment. They've been really struggling. Cleveland shuts them down over the weekend. They lose a couple to Baltimore. They're 2-5 against Baltimore. If they go down tonight with Alek Manoah on the hill, the alarm bells will really start to ring. But
big time.
You look ahead to their schedule. So they've got four against the Yankees, who have been just as bad as the Jays, if not worse. I mean, I don't know what's going on with the Yanks since Giancarlo Stanton went down.
Yeah. Yep.
They can't hit. They can't pitch. They can't do anything right. Their closers been absolute garbage. Clay Holmes. So who knows what that will bring. Then you got three against the Sox, but after that, I mean, you got the Pirates, you got the Cubs, you've got the Angels. So, and this is always how it works in a 162 game season, or if it's in the NHL or in the NBA, you can't overreact to a smaller sample size. But as far as the Jays being contenders, hanging with the Astros and hanging with Cleveland and hanging with the Yankees, assuming they get things back on track, I mean, it just seems a little bit far-fetched based on the totality of what we've seen from them this season.
Yeah, and listen, they came in with high expectations. They came in, thinking that they're going to be contenders. I don't see it right now. But like you said, there is a little bit of little more time. The Yankees have tailed off. Baltimore, scorching hot right now.
You got to admire the Orioles a little bit, too. I mean, they're a plucky bunch.
They
Trey Mancini.
Yeah,
they trade.
Keep winning.
It's much like in Major League. It seems like ownership was like, all right, guys, pack it in.
Moneyball.
We will welcome Keegan Mathison on the other side, and I need to tell you guys some stories about Josh Lewenberg's wedding over the weekend. I was fortunate enough to be present, and do I have some stories to share? Overdrive continues, TSN 4, and on TSN 1050. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and TSN 4. Korolnik, Corrado, DiStefano in for the fellas, and we're welcoming another one of our buddies onto the program. It's Keegan Mathison, live from the Dome, out of the J's and O's tonight. Big game for Alek Manoah, big game for the team as a whole. Good afternoon, Keegan. What's going on?
Happy to be here, guys. I missed the roommate talk earlier. And what
right.
I think we need to do is a Craigslist ad, maybe a Kijiji ad. Let's keep this as sketchy as we can. And let's interview some candidates on the air.
Oh, that's a great idea.
That is a brilliant idea.
That's what we're going to do.
Keegan, figuring out our content.
Your talents are misused at MLB.com, Keegan. You need to be in a matchmaking service for real estate prospectors. I think that's only natural.
I agree.
Let's talk about John Schneider, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. Just spoke to the media. I know you were there. I know he had some comments about Yusei Kikuchi. What can you tell us?
So with Kikuchi, Schneider and the Blue Jays continue to say that everything is on the table, which is typically not a vote of confidence. When things are on the table, that's not good if you're the person being spoken about. So with Kikuchi, the other way that I think the Blue Jays are tipping their hand or winking towards the truth here is that Schneider says that, you know, the word to describe where they're at right now is urgency. And he spoke about that after the game last night, because if this is April, who cares? You keep rolling him out there. You give him 5, 10, 20 starts. But he's had 5, 10, 20 starts at this point. This is a playoff race that really looks like it's going to be decided by a game. And whether it's about getting in or out or seeding in the playoffs, which is really important in that first wild card round, probably going to be a game or two. And how many more Yusei Kikuchi starts can I deal with is another grander question, really. Yeah. But it really has just sucked the air out of the stadium. Nothing takes the air out of a game quicker than that long first inning with a run scoring, some walks, and your offense is immediately playing from behind. So the big question from that is what you do next with him. If you move Mitch White in, does Kikuchi fit in the bullpen? How does he immediately figure it out there? We'll see. But the Blue Jays are definitely exploring that option. And I think as an organization realize that patience is something for April and May, but not August.
Keegan, how shocked would you be if Kikuchi never made another start for the Blue Jays?
I'd still be pretty shocked long term if it were never another start. And I think the elephant in the room here, guys, is that if this was a one-year, $1 million deal, we've long stopped having this conversation.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
This decision was made a while ago. Contracts matter in any sport. We all know that. But Kikuchi, of course, would be given that opportunity next year, maybe the year after. His next 2 years are $10 million salary each. Even if you have that in the bullpen, you know, that's something that can work, or at least, you know, can help you plug your nose and deal with it. But Kikuchi, I think, will long-term be given those opportunities. But right now, even having Mitch White, and let's not say that Mitch White is an ace or a savior here, but his ability to go out and give you at least four, ideally five and two-thirds, innings and not lose the game is really appealing. You're talking about a number five starter here, and it's amazing to look back. You know, I think the Hyunjin Ryu injury stings a little more in hindsight, and frankly, without Ross Stripling saving that rotation spot, this is a complete mess. But right now, you just need a number five who gives you a chance. They don't have to win the game. They just have to not lose it, and I don't think Kikuchi has fulfilled that a lot of times.
Doesn't it kind of speak to how troublesome this rotation has been when you're looking at Mitch White and Ross Stripling and saying, oh, thank God we have those two that we can roll out twice every five starts?
It's amazing, and it makes me realize, guys, you know, next spring, remind me, why am I bothering previewing a season? And this is something that I was off on back in February and March. Their upper minors depth. Now, at the time, there were guys like Thomas Hatch, Anthony Kay, Bowden Francis, a prospect. Ross Stripling was still that number six at that point, and it looked like Yusei Kikuchi would be at least that okay number five. We've even seen other guys come up through the year. Max Castillo was another one. But nobody has really stuck, and I think we are seeing the value of having a guy that's there and ready. Now, a lot of times you prepare well, and the Blue Jays looked like they had 7, 8, 9 deep, and it doesn't work out. You know, Thomas Hatch being a great example. When he came up a few weeks back and got absolutely rocked, Thomas Hatch is a pitcher I like. I still think he has a future, but it hasn't worked out. And you really get exposed quickly, because baseball, in the very simplest terms, is a sport where you take turns. So no matter what, your weakness will be exposed. It's not something you can hide with schemes. It's going to get exposed.
Our guest is Keegan Mathison, who covers the Toronto Blue Jays for MLB.com. Some surprising news, at least maybe unexpected, might be the best way to term it, Keegan. The lineup released about an hour ago, Bo Bichette hitting seventh. That is the lowest he has hit in the lineup in his major league career. What do you take away from that?
Yeah, big change. I think he only has one career game even hitting six. So this is a big change for Bichette. Now, when you have the name involved, it's a little surprising. Take the name away, and you are looking at a 300 on base percentage, a 730 OPS, lots of strikeouts involved there. That's where this bat goes in a lineup. That's where those numbers go in a major league lineup. And I think this is another example of that urgency that we talked about earlier. Now, early in the season, you know who Bichette is. He's an all-star caliber player. And frankly, guys, down in spring training, I thought Bichette was due for a monster season. Like, absolutely massive. He looked incredible. Coaches were raving about him. Everything looked incredible. And it hasn't worked. It just has not. And he's a guy who can be adjusted to by opposing pitchers because he's so aggressive at the plate. A veteran pitcher can find a hole in that. But he's been working at it. There's nobody who spends more time at this ballpark, I promise you, than Bo Bichette. But the numbers aren't there right now. So this is one of those moves where it's not always about, you know, big-brained analytics. Sometimes it's just, hey, let's shake this up, give a guy a different look, see if something shakes loose and works. I like the move. I think it's the right time for the move. And thankfully for the Blue Jays, a guy like Matt Chapman or Gurriel can move up who have been hitting well. So I think this makes a lot of sense.
Keegan, Alek Manoah goes tonight against the O's, a big game. They're only up by a game and a half now, so want to really try and get that victory to stretch that up to 2.5. But he hasn't looked as dominant as he was earlier this year, his last few starts. What's kind of been different about him of late than he was earlier in the season? Is it just workload catching up to him, or are you seeing something different here?
Yes, speaking of why do I preview things, big game against the Orioles in mid-August is amazing. But Manoah for 4 months, you know, up until very recently, was as consistent as you can get. You know, for the most part, I could write my story before the game began. It would be seven innings, six or seven strikeouts, maybe one run allowed, and a win. You know, Manoah is a winner. He sets his team up so well to win. Part of this is just natural fluctuation, which he avoided brilliantly all season, as well as any pitcher in baseball. But at this point, you also do have to start talking about workload. Now, he is built for it. You know, he is a massive individual. He is both taller and wider than me, which I don't really run into much in Major League Baseball, but this is a massive guy, built for innings. But he's a young guy, and when you deal with that pandemic season, which screwed up every pitcher in pro baseball, looking down the line, I know it's been a while, but that's still a factor here. So we'll see how that holds up. I think some off days are going to help these pitchers, but it's one to watch today with Manoah. Not exactly one where you can just type in what he's going to do immediately, but the Blue Jays need him. You know, they need him and Gausman to be winning almost every start, given the rest of this rotation.
Since the early July, Baltimore has been the best team in the AL East, and it's not even really close. Like, do you expect this to continue as the season winds down, or do you think we get to a point where Baltimore fizzles out because they have the Jays number, they have everyone's number right now, and they are right on the Jays' tail when it comes to that last wild card spot?
It's amazing, guys, and I think it's good to compare them and the Blue Jays. Right now, the Blue Jays are playing far lesser than the sum of their parts. You look at the names and you think this team should be running away. They're not. Then you look at a team like Baltimore, and we've said this over the years against the Rays at times too, or about the Rays, sorry, is that the names don't look like they add up to much, but they do. It's about how the team plays together. It's about the style. And what Baltimore really has working is a good bullpen. You know, they traded away their closer, and then there's some other guy throwing 101. That's what younger teams are starting to show around the league. That's an area the Blue Jays are kind of lagging behind. But I think you have to give them credit. It's not going to last at this rate, but I also don't think you can dismiss them because it's just the Orioles. These are not the same old Orioles. There are young players coming up and contributing. You've got the veterans like the Mullins. Ryan Mountcastle plays out of his mind every time he comes here. I don't understand it, but he does. It's an interesting team, and frankly, I think it's one of the best stories in baseball. I know a Blue Jays fan won't agree, and I get that, but this division is a mess, and I think the Orioles are going to be a pretty fun team this offseason, too. Their payroll is $10 right now. They can go out and spend, and they have a lot of young talent, maybe the best farm system in baseball. They're scary, and it's happening a lot quicker than I expected, that's for sure.
Yeah, Keegan, really quickly, you mentioned that they got an arm out there that can toss you 101. Jays don't, but there is Nate Pearson, who's been injured all season long. Is there any update there on whether or not he might be able to factor into this bullpen down the stretch here?
Pearson will throw a bullpen tomorrow down in Dunedin. Now, the dream at one point was to get him back in that 2-3-inning bulk role. At this point, if you can just get him back throwing, you're happy. You know, they need that velocity. So him and Yasser Zulueta, the other right-hander, are a couple of possibilities at velocity. But that's one spot where the Blue Jays tend to top out at 96, 97. And then every time I turn on my TV, I see three digits. And I say, what is that? But it's an area I think the Blue Jays are going to need to improve on. And they're seeing that from the farm system, doing a great job in the farm system developing that. Just going to take a little more time. But those are two names that could come.
It's a big one tonight down at the Dome, Keegan. You'll be covering it for MLB.com. Thank you for taking the time tonight. We appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Take care.
All right, Keegan Mathison, MLB.com. A little sweaty there for Jays fans. Yeah. I mean, not only the heat outside, I mean, it's a big one. Baltimore a game and a half back. The Jays are 2-5 against the O's this year. And no longer can take that team lightly.
And here's the thing, man. With Manoah on the mound, that's your saving grace. Like, that's the thing for you that you can look to and say, okay, this is the one where we get the win tonight, but... if that doesn't happen, you're looking at a team that's 2-8 in its last 10. That is ugly.
Yeah, and 4 against the Yanks in the Bronx coming up, too. And that could you could look at it both ways. The Yankees, the best team in baseball for the first 100 games or so, but they've been amongst the worst teams in baseball
in
the last 20 games.
Who's going to bust a slump? Right.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's it. So we'll see if it's the Jays, and if so, you know, that'd be good news for Toronto, not such good news for the Yanks. The O-Doc, speaking of good news, he will take some time on his day off to join us on the other side in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll also feature the filter with
love the filter
Al's brother. A busy hour two of Overdrive coming your way next.